Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
Trucking, got my chips cashed in. Keep trucking, like the doodah man. Together, more or less in line. Just keep trucking, home, home, home.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up later on our show today, the Chilean singer Francesca Arncarola sings songs from her upcoming tribute album to the great Chilean songwriter Victor Jara. But first, a provocative question. Were the Grateful Dead any good? It's a question that many have grappled with. I mean, few deny that the band's pioneering influence was felt throughout the concert industry in everything from sound systems to merchandising to allowing fans to tape concerts. Still, the Dead did make at least two studio albums, Working Man's Dead and American Beauty, that arguably represent the peak of their musical talents. Tomorrow night and Sunday night, songs from those albums will be performed in an all-star concert at the World Financial Center. Joining us today are two of the performers from that event, Jorma Kaukonen, the guitarist and founding member of the bands Jefferson Airplane and Hot Tuna, who was around at the start of the whole scene there in San Francisco, joining us on the phone, and Andy Statman, the klezmer clarinetist and bluegrass mandolinist who's played with Garcia and Company in the early 70s, is with me here in the studio. And we're also joined on the phone by Josh Barron, the executive editor of Relics Magazine, a music magazine which was founded back in 1974 as a newsletter for Grateful Dead tape traders. Welcome to all of you. Josh, let me start with you. I mean, most people associate the Grateful Dead with the whole Haight-Ashbury hippie lifestyle and you know, the enduring cult phenomenon of their fans, the Deadheads, as it were. Aside from all of that, just looking at the band as a group of musicians, what is the lasting value? What has separated them from so many other bands of that style in that era?
Well, I mean, I think it was really the way they infused all of their influences into this sort of heady amalgam of just about everything. As you said, you know, bluegrass, country, rock, psychedelic, jazz, and, you know, obviously a lot of bands look to that, but I think there were few bands that could go as far out as a song like Dark Star into these, you know, really out there improvisations and then do something as sort of sentimental and folky as Ripple the next time over. And I think, you know, one of the last impacts is that, you know, people in that they still haven't been able to be classified to some degree.
You know, and the other weird thing is, I mean, we're talking about a band whose songs are still all over, you know, rock radio, classic rock radio. They never had a hit single except for Touch of Grey in 1987 towards the end of the band. There is this kind of impression that making an album for them was kind of a, you know, just a chore, a thing to be done in between what they really loved to do, which was playing live.
Well, I mean, I think that does a real disservice to them and their albums. I mean, they have an extensive discography, and Jorma and Andy could probably speak better to that to a degree, certainly Jorma. But, I mean, Garcia and company took this process pretty seriously, and they were always on the cutting edge of technology and new techniques as far as what you could do in the studio, and were really innovative in that sense. I mean, all that whole San Francisco scene really helped shape a sound, and Garcia was friends with so many different musicians at that time and was highly respected as a musician and as a producer and a session player.
All right. So. Jorma Kaukonen from Hot Tuna, Jefferson Airplane et al. Also joining us on the phone. Jorma, you were there back in those early days when, you know, what Josh was just telling us, all this mix of all these different styles was coming together. What was the scene like? How was it possible for you and Jerry Garcia, the rest of the Dead, the rest of your band, to do what you did?
Well, I think there's a lot of synchronicity involved, certainly. We were allowed to do a lot of stuff because people allowed you to do that back then. It was an interesting time. I think the Jerry and the Dead were certainly, in many respects, much more sophisticated as band, as contributing band members than myself, certainly. I mean, I never really played in the band before I got in the airplane. I just kind of had to figure stuff out. And I remember talking to him a lot about, you know, how the role of a guitarist. I didn't play lead guitar before I got in the band, in my band either. And he just kind of had sort of figured these things out over the years. You know, the guys playing together in jug bands and bluegrass bands. And all these things require a lot of discipline. I mean, you know, you talk to some people that don't really look deeply into the music, and they just kind of think it's like a bunch of guys partying and having fun. And, you know, that certainly is a component to it. But these were really thoughtful musicians.
Well, let me bring it back here to the studio. Andy Statman also taking part in this event on the weekend, celebrating two albums by the Grateful Dead, specifically Working Man's Dead and American Beauty. Andy, you saw the Dead live, and of course they made their reputation as a live band. But you were telling me before we went on today that you actually were impressed seeing them work in the studio, in the sessions.
Yeah, I was fortunate to be involved in a few days of studio work with them, and they took great pains to get everything perfect. They were very thoughtful in their arrangements. And if you listen to the two records that are being celebrated, while the records have a very sort of casual type of sound, if you really start listening, there are bars of 10, there are bars of 7, there's like Coltrane sounding riffs at different, you know, the songs are really, it's almost like a George Martin production, but it still retains this somehow very loose, like it just threw it together sound. It's
right.
Pretty amazing.
So it's I mean, there's a certain art to that, to creating that sense.
It's sort of thoughtful casualness is the only way maybe to describe it.
All right. Josh Barron, the executive editor of Relics magazine. The weekend, the concerts are celebrating these two records, Working Man's Dead, American Beauty. Why these two, would you say?
Well, I think to some degree, they probably lend themselves easiest to interpretation and sort of covering. You know, they certainly contain a lot of the songs that people identify with the band. But I mean, I think specifically with American Beauty, if you know someone is asked for a recommendation, what is the first Grateful Dead album I should buy? It's frequently American Beauty. It was certainly the first album I was exposed to on my father's vinyl. You know, and I think that's really oftentimes a starting point for people. Obviously, they go different directions after that, but I think that's really, from my point of view, a starting point for any fan.
All right, both of these records, Working Man's Dead and American Beauty, were ranked on Rolling Stone's list of the 500 greatest albums of all time, with this one, American Beauty, slightly higher. Both came out in 1970. Here's The Dead from American Beauty.
Sugar Magnolia, blossoms blooming. It's all empty and I don't care.
So my baby down by the river
knew she'd have to come up soon for dear.
Sweet blossom, come on under the willow. We can have high times if you look back. We can discover the wonders of nature
rolling in the rushes down by the riverside. She's got everything we like for. She's got everything I need. Takes the wheel when I'm seeing double. Pays my ticket when I speed.
Sugar Magnolia from the Grateful Dead's 1970 album American Beauty, one of two albums being celebrated by an all-star cast of musicians at the World Financial Center this weekend in two free concerts. Which I'll be hosting, and which two of my guests, Andy Statman and Jorma Kaukonen, will be taking part in. We're also speaking with Josh Barron from Relics magazine. And we want to take some of your opinions as well on why does the Grateful Dead matter? Is it the music? Is it more to it than that? Is it the whole phenomenon, the whole subculture that grew up around the Dead? Do you have a favorite Grateful Dead memory? Or do you find their music too self-indulgent and noodling? Does the music still have a lasting impact when the drugs have worn off? You can call us at 212-264-7483. 212-264-7483. 864-7483. Let me throw a question out to Jorma Kaukonen. Jorma, you mentioned you were there, you know, talking to Jerry Garcia about, you know, the way that a band works together and all that
right.
kind of stuff. There was this other aspect. There was the culture that grew up around their music and to an extent grew up around, you know, your second band, especially Hot Tuna. How did that happen? And how does something like that sustain itself over a period now of two generations?
Well, I think if we could actually tell you how that happened, we'd plan on it happening as frequently as possible. I really don't know. You know, I couldn't tell you, but, you know, I was just thinking while I was listening to some of the discussions and listening to the little clip of the Dead's music you played, you listen to a Grateful Dead song, even one of the so-called folky ones, and you think, I could sit down and I could jam on this song right now. But you'd be wrong, because even their simple folky sounding things have all these really trick little things going on. And to play that song the way they do it, you've got to sit down and think about it. So, you know, there's a bunch of stuff going on. There certainly was that, you know, that 60s explosion and all this kind of stuff. And yes, drugs had a big part of it and all that. And at the same time, here's a bunch of guys who are allowed to be able to take the time to create some really, really sophisticated stuff. And an audience who could take the time to listen to it.
Yeah. And also, they invited their audience in a way that, in a sense, Jorma, has prefigured some of the burning questions facing the music industry in the digital age. You know, kind of just giving it away. If you showed up to a concert with a tape deck, you were allowed to plug in.
Right. Right. And, of course, there's huge discussions about this, and this is probably not a forum for that. You know, they certainly pioneered the free music sharing thing, and that's a great thing. I think some of us, as we get older, would like to control that a little bit.
Uh-huh.
It's not totally possible. But, you know, without getting into whether you think this is right or wrong, one of the great things about that is that the music lives in people's hearts, and they can pick it up, and they can listen to it. And it makes it accessible to them, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, regardless of whether you think you should be able to do that or not, the bottom line is even if those of us that have some question about us really know it's a good thing.
All right. Andy Statman, Jorma mentioning pretty much what you were talking about before, that the kind of loose-limbed quality of a lot of the Dead's music belied the fact that there was a lot of very careful planning going on. When you were in the studio with the guys, who did you see as, I mean, what was... Did, for example, Jerry stand out from the rest as kind of the musical backbone, the leader of the band, or was it a little more loose than that, even?
I think his decisions carried a certain amount of weight, but everyone contributed. Everyone was very interested in having as good a final product as possible.
Now, you were not a part of that San Francisco scene that Jorma and Jerry Garcia and the Dead were part of.
No.
You were coming from the East Coast, traditional, you know, roots, acoustic Americana
right.
tradition. And in fact, the record that you played with the Grateful Dead on was a David Bromberg record.
Correct.
So clearly Bromberg and some other people on the scene here were looking west and saying there's something there that those guys have.
Oh, sure. The music from the West Coast had a tremendous influence on the scene here in New York. In some ways, there was, I think by that time, you know, late 70s, late 60s or early 80s, there's a unified counterculture movement,
yeah.
which was...
What year was this record, the David Bromberg? Was it 72? Or
no, it was 70 or 71.
Okay, but it was, I think, released in 74. And here's the song Danger Man with my guest Andy Statman and Jerry Garcia and company with David Bromberg.
I'm a danger man in a dangerous city, and I lead a dangerous life. I got a dangerous car, goes dangerous speeds, and a very dangerous wife. I got 16 dangerous girlfriends, not counting one or two. Hey, look out, kid, you don't want to get hit. I'm dangerous for you, you better look out.
Danger man, you're so bad, it's a crime. Danger man, come up and see me sometime.
You know I'm a dangerous my fingertips, my mom, dangerous hip and toe. I got a dangerous mind and a dangerous body. God knows I got a dangerous nose. I'm wanted by the Board of Ingrid, damned by the Board of Health. I don't keep no mirrors around my house, cause I even scare myself. You better look out.
Danger Man, David Bromberg with his guests, Andy Statman, who's with me on soundcheck today, and Jerry Garcia, Phil Lesh. It was, that's got to be a trip down memory lane for you, Andy. Little flashback stuff happening here?
Definitely, yeah.
So was it the whole Grateful Dead, or just...
It was with the exception of the bassist and the inclusion of a timbales player.
Okay.
And I guess I was playing part of a horn section there on that particular
song. Oh, so you were, this was
playing
you in tenor sax mode as
yeah.
opposed to mandolin. Andy is part of the weekend tribute to the Grateful Dead at the World Financial Center. Two free events. Jorma Kaukonen's with us on the phone. He's taking part in this event as well. And we're also speaking with Josh Barron from Relics Magazine. And Josh, to what extent were the Grateful Dead a model for today's kind of indie rock DIY trend in the music industry?
Oh, I think they had a huge impact. I mean, certainly for the bigger jam bands today, and obviously to some degree indie rock, but bands like Fish, White Trip Panic, String Cheese Incident, they really set the model for that in terms of saying, look, it really is about touring. You can get a great fan base, and you don't need a hit record. Sure, you can release albums on occasion, but really where it's at and where the magic happening is most consistently happening is live on stage and improvising. And I think a lot of bands realize that. I mean, the Dead were certainly the first band to ever implement a mail-order ticketing system for fans.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's commonplace. Dave Matthews has its warehouse. I think the Rolling Stones may have something. Music Today is largely based around that, you know, really servicing the fans and catering to the fans' needs and desires, you know, for a really and developing a very, very core fan base that is extremely passionate and extremely in tune. You know, obviously, to some degree, it became occasionally a monkey on their back, but they were obviously very, very grateful, no pun intended, for their fans.
Right. Before we take a break and then get to some phone calls, Josh, just quickly, there is the occasional critical note sounded that, you know, during their many, many years on the road, that the Grateful Dead had that sound but never really expanded on it, that once you knew what a Dead concert was, that's what it always would be. Any response to that?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I'm certainly a relatively young Grateful fan in the bigger scheme of things. And if you listen to the Dead beginning from, you know, the live tapes, they certainly, that sound, it changes over the years without question. But as I said earlier, what that sound is was never easy to pinpoint.
Mm.
Yes, there's that spacey noodling, but that's only one small part of what they were doing. They had some very jazzy moments, some very folky moments, some very rock moments.
Andy Statman was telling us, you know, you could hear little bits of Coltrane occasionally
in some of that stuff.
It was the
lack of definition that defined what the Grateful Dead was.
All right. Well, we're talking about the Grateful Dead, the music, but even more than that, the phenomenon, the subculture that grew up around it. We're talking with Jorma Kaukonen and Andy Statman, two of the musicians taking part in this weekend's free concerts at the World Financial Center, and Josh Barron of Relics Magazine. And in a moment, with some of our soundcheck listeners. So stay with us. We'll also have the Chilean singer Francesca Ancarola singing live in our studio later. Some songs from her upcoming tribute album to Victor Jara. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck.
Keep me up just one more night. I can't sleep here no more. Little Ben clock says quarter to eight.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're talking about the Grateful Dead, the music, of course, but also the wider phenomenon of the Grateful Dead, a band who could do a song like this, Dark Star, for up to 48, 49 minutes in length, the longest recorded version of the piece that we have from one of their many, many concerts is 48 minutes, 38 seconds in 1972. This is from England, 1972, the Grateful Dead. My guests include Josh Barron, the executive editor of Relics magazine, which began back in the early 70s as a kind of mimeographed fanzine for Grateful Dead tape traders, and also two of the musicians who are taking part in this weekend's celebration, the so-called American Beauty Project at the World Financial Center. Andy Statman's with me in the studio, the clarinetist and mandolinist, and Jorma Kaukonen's with us on the phone as well from Hot Tuna and the Jefferson Airplane. And I guess, Jorma, you mentioned before, you used a strange word. You used allowed. You and Jerry and, you know, the early San Francisco scene, you were allowed to do this kind of odd combination of American roots music, of psychedelic rock. Does that imply that you would not be allowed to do something like that in today's musical world?
Well, I think a lot of those barriers really don't exist anymore, but in some respect, yeah, I think that there are fewer audiences today that would allow you to do that, simply because of the way people have again programmed to respond to quote unquote popular music. But you know, if you think about, and you know, I even though I'm from the East Coast, I lived in the West Coast then, so I didn't really know what was going on in New York. But if you looked at a show that, let's say, Bill Graham was promoting, you could have a Russian poet like Yevtushenko, you could have a jazz band like Charles Lloyd, you could have the Grateful Dead or the Jefferson Airplane or whatever. And you could have all these people on the same show. And the audience would be into all of them.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm out of line when I say that would be pretty impossible to imagine that happening today.
Mm-hmm.
Josh?
I absolutely agree. You know, I mean, it was a really special, innovative time for music. And, you know, it's why people like younger editors and writers and journalists like myself are so nostalgic for that time, because it was really quite magical. I mean, I just interviewed Crosby a little while ago, and he talked about, you know, in 1970 in the Bay Area at Wally Hyder's studio, he's recording If I Could Only Remember My Name, The Airplane are doing Blow Against the Empire, The Dead are wrapping up American Beauty, and they're all in the studio together,
yeah,
hanging out and kind of moving from studio to studio, playing on each other's albums. And there was a camaraderie that I don't know, maybe you could shed more light on, Jorma, that I just don't see in today's music, really, in terms of recording.
Well, I think if you look at what was happening in that time, another thing that was happening also is we were all buds. You know, we had kind of all, like David had moved to the Bay Area, he lived in Sausalito. You know, we were all friends. Everybody was just hanging out. So you kind of had that aspect of it also. And even though, you know, musicians are sort of a competitive lot by nature, we also had a lot of respect for each other. And it was exciting to hear what somebody else was doing, you know. I mean, you know, as sort of like a folkie myself who'd been thrust into a pretty sophisticated musical world, I mean, I was always like learning cool chords from David Crosby or from this person or from that person, or having Jerry help me learn how to arrange stuff and whatnot. And so it was just really exciting time. Something was always going on, and we were friends, and we respected each other.
All right. We've got Jorma Kaukonen and Josh Barron on the phone, but we have many, many other people on the phone as well. I want to get to some of our emailers and some of our phone calls, and let's start with Keith here in Manhattan. Keith, welcome to Soundcheck.
How you doing?
So, Grateful Dead, fan or foe?
Oh, definitely a fan, and I'm looking forward to this weekend. I'll be there.
Great.
I'm a musician. I'm a guitar player, and I will say that I was a little later into getting into the Dead, and I want to pick up on that, you know, the deceptively simple aspect of their music. Jerry especially, and Jerry's, you know, compositions with Robert Hunter, I don't really think you can point to anybody that's ever really constructed songs, you know, like China Doll and, you know, some of those tunes and Wharf Rat. And his playing, you know, if we're talking from a technical point of view, he is he's astonishing. I used to think it was just the same old, he's just blowing over the same sort of country blues changes. But, you know, you get into like 73, 74 era Dead and, you know, into those, that year, into the mid-70s and 80s and stuff when his chops were still up, you start to play along with that stuff, and he's approaching scales, you know, that you just would never commonly sort of use in rock music. Plus, he doesn't really bend a lot of notes. He's very linear. So that's one thing that, you know, I take from their music.
All right. Well, you mentioned 1973. We actually, during the course of the week, we sent out our regular WNYC e-newsletter and asked some of our listeners via email to tell us some of their favorite Grateful Dead memories. And this one is from June of 1973 from Gil on Cape Cod. And let me just read this. He said, in June of 73, we picked the Dead up on I-95 after their station wagon broke down and brought them to the show that we were on our way to see that day in New Haven. Let's just say I'm glad I wasn't driving. So that's an interesting memory, picking up the band and taking them to their show. We also invited people to tell us how many times they have seen the Grateful Dead live. 25% of our respondents said 21 to 50 times they had seen the Grateful Dead. That is by far the biggest single block of votes. The biggest surprise, though, 16% of our listener poll had seen the Grateful Dead more than 100 times. And those are the people who look down their noses at the people who've only seen them 21 to 50 times. So those are some of our email responses. Let's go back to the phones. And Lori, who is also here in Manhattan. Hey, Lori.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Well,
fan as well?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. They're probably my favorite band, well, aside from Steely Dan.
Okay.
But I think it's because they were so organic. They were into so many different kinds of music. And they seemed to, like, give us all a sense of camaraderie because all of us could find something good.
So
something that we liked.
Okay. So what we were sort of talking about before, the inviting the audience in, whether that means actually, taping a concert, or they just found a way to make you feel like you were kind of part of the community.
Yeah, like we were all one.
Right.
You know, it was the type of time it was anyway. But bands like, you know, Zeppelin and Grand Funk Railroad kind of scared the women.
Right.
And,
okay.
And the Grateful Dead didn't.
Okay, that's an interesting point. Thanks, Laurie.
Thank you.
Let's go to New Jersey. Matt joining us. Matt, you describe yourself as a longtime Deadhead, but you're only 33. So
32.
32. All right.
32. I started out listening to the Grateful Dead on vinyl, on my dad's vinyl records, listening to them on those giant green Koss headphones and a beautiful tube amplifier, probably 27 years ago. And
these things probably took up half a room, didn't they? They didn't sit on a bookshelf.
Right. They had their own wing.
Right.
I think what I'm always struck by with the Grateful Dead is how well they managed to condense the canon of American folk music into a very few albums, and then they managed to sort of blow it up again in touring.
Mm. All right. Well, and what really strikes me about the Grateful Dead, and I think Matt is a good example of it, is how it has spanned generations and how a second or maybe even third generation of people are turning up Deadheads. Jorma Kaukonen, you've experienced a kind of a similar thing with Hot Tuna and with this kind of ongoing guitar seminar that you do there in the foothills of the Appalachians. The generational thing has got to be, for a musician, one of the most, gratifying things that you can see in your audience.
Oh, totally. I mean, gratifying is certainly a good word for that. I think that...
I was trying to avoid the word gratifying because of the whole Grateful Dead thing, but go ahead.
It's a good word. I think that one of the things that lasts in music, I mean, there are such things as timeless music, and I don't think you can plan, you don't start out and say, well, you know, I'm going to be a timeless musician, because if we could do that, there'd be a lot of timeless musicians. but some of us have been lucky with some of our music, and for whatever reason, and I think just good music speaks for itself. I mean, you know, Jerry and the guys were extremely honest about what they did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no artifice. You know, there's a lot of complexities and whatnot, but it's just, there's no artifice. It's just pure music, and that's where the guys went. And the chemistry between all of them just came up with some totally remarkable things that I think that probably, you know, any one of them in another situation might not have come up with.
Well, and they came up with music that not only spans generations, but Andy Statman, you know, styles. I mean, you know, this weekend we're going to have, you know, groups like Ola Bell and the Holmes
right.
Brothers, Jen Chapin, who, among other things, is the daughter of Harry Chapin, the Klezmatics. What are you going to do? Are you taking the klezmer clarinet approach, or are you going with your bluegrass mandolin hat on?
Actually, the first time I'm playing with a berimbau player, I'm playing clarinet. And
clarinet and berimbau, the Brazilian archery bow percussion instrument.
And we're going to take a sort of Coltrane-type riff and put it into another place.
All right.
And the second night, I'll be with mandolin and the true I work with. So.
Very good. Well, all of this is happening as part of the American Beauty Project, two free events at the World Financial Center celebrating the albums Working Man's Dead and American Beauty by the Grateful Dead. We've been speaking with Jorma Kaukonen and Andy Statman, two of the musicians taking part, and Josh Barron from Relics Magazine. To the three of you, thank you very much for joining us. To everyone who called and emailed, thank you all for being with us as well. And coming up in just a moment, Chilean singer Francesca Ancarola sings songs from her upcoming tribute album to the poet, musician, and social activist Victor Jara. This is Soundcheck.
Are you kind? It's a buck dancer's choice, my friends. Better take my advice. You know all the rules by now and the fire from the ice. Will you come with me? Won't you come with me? Oh, oh, what I want to know.
Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.